Chapter 39 Thrashings. By the time the sky lightened the next morning, Jen felt very cross, and not the least bit tired. While he preferred to sleep, his training allowed him to go for days without doing so, and today was going to be one of those days. When Jaren relieved him at sunrise, he went to find something to eat before everyone awoke. A few soldiers milled around the supply wagon, but it was Maywin packing her backpack that caught Jen's attention. "Where are you going?" Jen asked her in Elvish. "To scout ahead. I will return by nightfall. I cannot put my mind at ease and need to go have a look for myself." An idea leapt into Jen's head. Getting away from the caravan was exactly what he needed. "Let me come with you." He knew it was a long shot. Maywin wasn't fond of company in general, on her excursions doubly so. Her face registered surprise, then contemplation, and then, to his delight, she agreed. "Do you have to get permission?" she asked. "Yes, from Regent Ogbeth. Well, let's go get it. I'll bring enough provisions for both of us, and we'll take turns with the pack." Regent Ogbeth tented with his soldiers, and they found him there shaving his square face with a sharp knife. He eyed them questioningly as they approached.
"Good morning. Looks like another hot day ahead. What do you two need?"
Just as Jen opened his mouth to ask the question, Maywin spoke. "I still feel at ease and want to scout forward today. I would like to have Jen's sword at my back. We will return in time for his nightly watch." Regent Ogbeth wiped his knife on his pants.
"Really? Do you think there's a need? I know the long-range scouts haven't come back, but we just had our short-range scouts return without report of anything for miles in front of us."
"Men on horses miss much, Regent," Maywin said. "I would like to settle my mind about the road ahead." Regent Ogbeth clearly felt that the whole thing was unnecessary, but he relented.
"As long as you get him back in time and in shape to do his duty, he may go. Anything else?"
"No, Regent," Maywin replied. Jen felt elated as Maywin led him back toward the caravan proper. "Can you shoot a bow, Jen?" she asked.
"Yes."
Samian had been an absolute master, and Jen felt he could hit a sparrow at 100 yards in the dark. "Talk to the weapons master and procure one while I pack the food. Then let's get going. The sun is already higher than I like." In short order, Jen had the bow strung and around his shoulders. Maywin took the pack first and with a wry grin turned to him. "Let's see if you can keep up." Turning her face to the rising sun, she sprinted along the edge of the caravan and Jen kept pace. Heads turned as they whipped by like the wind, and Jen couldn't help but grin with satisfaction as Jeff, having already found Fenner before she began her duties with the Shalane, looked at him with 100 questions plainly written on his features. Jen knew he'd have to steel himself to answer every one of those questions when he returned, but after a quick smile and a wave to an equally puzzled Fenner, Jen put the caravan behind him and revelled in the rush of the warming wind around his face. They ran for nearly an hour before Maywin stopped for the first time. "That is better," she said, taking in the emptiness around them.
"Much better," Jen agreed, stretching his legs to keep them loose. "I tire of the caravan with each passing mile."
Maywin smiled at him, dark hair streaming around her face in a stiff morning breeze.
"You run well, Jen. I fear, however, that with our departure the caravan is bereft of anyone with sense."
Jen laughed. Maywin didn't.
"Ethrys is a smart one," Jen said. "He'll keep them from doing anything incredibly stupid."
"Ethrys is indeed a smart man, but he is not an outdoorsman. The greater part of his life has been spent in damp towers with his nose in books."
"True," Jen agreed, Maywin offering him a swig from the waterskin.
"Are we looking for anything in particular out here?"
"You tell me, Jen. You seem to know more than anyone your age should. What do you think we would be searching for?"
Jen thought for a moment.
"If I were planning to ambush the caravan along this route, I would obviously want to make sure the scouts returned, thinking the way was clear for as long as possible. I wouldn't try to mount an assault in this open plain, but secrete a large force on foot where there was a narrow passage thick with trees or scattered rocks, so that the effectiveness of the horses and the mobility of the caravan would be limited. If the enemy has scouts along this route watching our progress, They are no doubt pleased that everyone seems so carefree.
Exactly, Eowyn concurred.
And if one of the caravan's scouts saw something, you would prevent them from returning. So we look for signs of their scouts more than our own.
Yes.
It is hard to hide anything out here, but the Uyumark skin camouflage transforms even this barren terrain into a field ripe for a harvest of trouble. I have little hope of finding anything, but even if I can turn up a 10-year rotted Uyumark skeleton, I will drag it back just to see if it can scare some thinking into Regent Ogbith.
Jen grinned.
Whether our little trip does the Regent any good, he said, it has already done wonders for me. I thank you for allowing me to come. I wouldn't have agreed if it had been anyone else but you. You are a rare one. It has been a pleasure having someone in camp that speaks Elvish. The human tongue grates on me. You speak Elvish so well, in fact, you could probably pass for one in the night. How did you learn it? Not as a bard in a backwoods town, I think.
Jen's mind raced. He still hadn't decided how to tell her about Samian.
It is a long story that deserves more time than we can comfortably devote to it now. I will tell you later.
Very well, she said.
And Jen was grateful she did not press the matter. From Samian he knew such patience was a common quality in elves, born of their long lives. Let's see how well you can run with a pack on your back. They ran at a brisk pace for over an hour. The terrain changed slightly the farther they went, showing more character than the less varied miles behind. Hills, depressions, and clumps of trees more frequently lay about their path, and Maywin would sporadically dart off their eastward track and scout around before turning back to the main path. Charred shadows moved over the landscape as they passed overhead, providing temporary relief from the sun beating down on their necks. It was nearly midday when the half-elf pulled up abruptly, signalling for silence. Catching Jen's eyes, she directed his vision northeast. At first, Jen couldn't see anything out of the ordinary, but as Maywin led him forward another 100 yards, he spotted a thin wisp of smoke coming over a low hill, barely visible even in broad daylight. Maywin crouched low and helped Jen remove the pack. Leaning close, she whispered, "Someone with some lore lit that fire. It is well masked. We'll approach quickly. I can see no lookout on the hilltop. Let's go see what we can see. Remember where the pack is."
Jen nodded, and they sprinted quietly toward the tendril of smoke. They covered the last yards on their bellies, scooting forward to peer over the summit of a low hill. What they saw brought little comfort. Ahead of them, a depression formed a shallow bowl, the hill on which they lay forming the highest lip. In the bowl, a company of Uyumark milled around in the brutal sun. Some slept, others walked about aimlessly, and some huddled in tight circles. A small cook fire boiled a viscous brown liquid in a dark cauldron, while two Uyumark took turns stirring it. Jen marvelled at them. Their colour-changing skin challenged his vision, complicating a quick understanding of the scene. Jen noted the elements of a typical Uyumark company. There were 11 hunters, long, wiry Uyumark that could run like the wind. 7 archers, like hunters but with thicker torsos and greater strength, sat together fletching arrows for longbows polished a dull black. 11 bashers, armed with crossbows, shields, and axes, were mostly asleep. They were short, bulky, and strong, bred to break shield walls and cut down horses. Then there were the 11 Uyumark warriors, a blend of speed and strength possessing more intelligence than the others. An Uyumark shaman stood outside a tent fashioned from dark hides. He watched his charges, slapping his chest in their mysterious percussive language. Noticeably missing was the Chukka, a dark elf ranger that most often led Uyumark companies. Maywin signalled to Jen, and they scooted backward. Again she leaned close. "Normally I would leave now, but with you at my side I'm a bit more bold. The Chukka is missing, but if we could kill the shaman, it would be a heavy blow. If we fail, however, the shaman will make things miserable for us. Even if we succeed, we will have to fight off the hunters. We should be able to outrun the others. It would be good to get some token of this place to show the caravan." While the wisdom of Samian and Elberon told him this course of action was foolhardy,
Telmeren wouldn't have hesitated to wade into the thick of trouble. Dealing a blow to the Uyumak might aid the safety of the caravan, and Maywin was right. While their word of an Uyumak company might be enough, if they had some tangible evidence to show, it would put a definite end to the reckless, carefree behaviour that had grated on him for so long. "All right," he agreed. "I'll split off to the left and shoot first to draw their attention. That way the hunters will come for me. If I hit, retreat and cover me when the hunters come for me. If I miss, it will be up to you to kill the shaman. One shot each, and we run."
Maywin smiled, but not the kind of smile that invited one in return.
Jen scooted away, taking his time and going slowly. The sun beat down on him like a forge hammer, Jen's lips sticky with thirst and sweat dripping off his nose. Finding a thick clump of blonde grass, he unlimbered his bow and pulled out an arrow. He wiped his hands to dry them and, after setting arrow to string, turned his head to see if Maywin was ready. She was on her knees, a little farther back down the hill, watching him intently. Jen nearly lost his grip on his bow. Coming up behind her, ghost-like, was the chucker. He floated silently over the grass, his dark green cloak semi-transparent. Jen had been shown this ranger's trick when he had worn the training stones. It was wind-walking, a completely soundless way to move from one point to another. He was almost upon her, a dark blade coming to his hand. Jen knew the chucker would have to solidify completely before attacking. He had no way to warn Maywin short of yelling, which would bring the whole camp on them. The chucker edged closer and stopped. Jen leapt to his feet, pulled the arrow to his cheek, and let the arrow fly. Maywin's eyes widened with shock as Jen's arrow sprung toward her, but comprehension dawned quickly and she threw herself to the ground just as the chucker solidified, dropped to the ground, and swung his knife. Maywin's sudden movement proved enough to send the knife wide. The arrow slammed into the chucker's upper chest, throwing him sideways and onto the ground with a thud. He screamed, and Maywin was on him, slashing with her knife. Jen turned back to the camp as he pulled and strung another arrow. The Uyumak were standing dead still and looking up the hill, and just as they caught sight of him, Jen loosed an arrow at the shaman. Sounds of Uyumak thumping and tapping split the air. The shaman noticed his assailant at the last moment, tossing aside its staff as he dove away. The move saved his life, the arrow sinking into its meaty shoulder instead of his head, and driving him to the ground. The hunters rose up and sprinted up the hill at Jen. Memories of hunters charging were plentiful in Jen's mind, but to see one directed at him in broad daylight awakened within him a real sense of danger. The hunters moved fluidly and with heart-stopping speed. He fled, finding Maywin already at the bottom of the hill turned toward him. Her cloak was spattered with black blood, and Jen hoped none of hers mixed with it. He chanced to look back to see all 11 hunters cresting the hill, closing on him at an alarming rate. Maywin's bow sang, and an arrow whistled by Jen's head, catching the lead chaser in the throat. It fell hard to the ground, tripping up two of the hunters behind it. Maywin shot twice more before Jen reached her side, both her arrows dropping their pursuers. They ran as fast as their legs would take them, but Jen saw that they would not be able to escape without a fight. "Keep running, and turn to cover me if you can," Jen yelled in Elvish. Maywin nodded. He waited until a hunter was nearly on him, and then spun around with a hard slash from right to left. It was the first time Jen had swung the sword Mirel had given him against an enemy, and after the stroke he thought he had missed. The blade met no resistance. Jen nearly lost his balance, but he sprang back defensively, awaiting a strike from the enemy he thought he had failed to mark. As he did, the Uyumak fell neatly in half at the midsection, where he had slashed. Jen had little time to think about it as two Uyumak bowled over their dead companion and came for him. Two others came behind those, and the remaining three streaked after Maywin. Jen knew he had to be quick. Lanky arms with claws groped for him, and he whirled the blade about him furiously. And wherever the blade struck, whether thick hide or soft underbelly, it went through just as easily as if cutting through a thin fog. Limbs fell about him, and black blood stained the blonde grass, as each Uyumak fell in rapid succession. As he killed the last, he saw the archers and warriors crest the hill, churning toward them, skin matching the colour of the grass. Jen turned and ran. Maywan had taken down 2 hunters with her bow before the last reached her, and she was trying to fend it off with a long knife that was ill-suited for battling with the long-limbed monster. Fortunately, Maywan was close and Jen was quick. With a vicious downward slice from behind, Jen bisected the Uyumak cleanly. Maywan gathered her bow and sprang away as arrows began to whistle down on them. Jen ran behind Maywan to protect her. The hunter had clawed her arms in several places, blood drenching her sleeves. Time seemed to slow as they fled, as in dreams where the goal waits just out of reach and every step forward takes you no closer. An arrow nicked his upper arm, and with the quick reflexes imbued by the training stones, he batted away another aimed at his head, though he got a nasty cut across his right hand for the effort. In dismay, he realized he couldn't move his fingers, though the pain didn't bother him. With one last sprint, they passed the effective range of the archers and arrived at the spot where they had left their gear. Maywan grabbed it quickly, shouldering it and bounding away.
"Are you hurt?" she asked, gasping for air. "I can't shoot the bow, but I can still run and use the sword. Let's see if we can outpace the warriors."
Jen glanced west to see all 11 running in a line behind their leader. They carried great clubs and large shields that seemed to float in the air beside vague shapes in the distance. While the warriors could not run as quickly, the delay caused by the hunter's assault proved just enough for the beasts to get directly in Jen and Maywan's westward path of retreat. Their enemies knew which way the caravan lay.
"We cannot turn west," Maywan shouted. "They can outlast us, and they run well in the dark, but they cannot outrun us with that heavy gear. We must keep running south as fast as we can until we can get around them."
Jen grunted in understanding and ran on behind her, her blood and his dotting the ground as they ran. After several minutes and a small separation from their foes, Maywan halted. They drank hastily, and Maywan discarded all the food to lighten the pack. Behind them, the Uyumak persistently advanced. They had thrown aside their shields, lightening their load so they could run more quickly. Exhausted, Maywan led Jen farther south. The yellow grass diminished as they came upon harder and flatter ground, making for good running. Sweat stung Jen's wounds, and he felt his legs weakening from a week's worth of exertion, churned out in a few hours' time.
"Let's make our break," Maywan yelled, turning abruptly west.
Jen came to her right so as to be the first in the melee should they fail, and fail they did. The Uyumak put on a sudden burst of speed upon seeing their quarry change direction. The Uyumak line was strung out over the space of 100 yards, the quickest and hardiest pressing forward swiftly. Again, Jen told Maywan to run on, and he saw fear in her eyes for the first time. Jen drew his sword with his left hand and stopped in the path. This sudden defense brought the first Uyumak to a halt as Jen leapt forward and decapitated it. Before the corpse could hit the ground, he sliced off the leg of the second one in the line. The third raised his club and arced it over its head with a heavy overhand stroke. Jen met the blow with his sword, splitting the club down the middle and chopping the Uyumak down in one movement. The fourth and fifth thumped furiously on their chests, beating out some plan in their percussive language. 2 Uyumak barreled toward Maywan, who had stopped and knocked her bow. The rest did not press the attack until their companions arrived, and then they came with fury. Jen struggled, falling backward, to keep them from encircling him. He was dimly aware of the thuds of arrow impacts as Maywan finished the 2 other Uyumak off, and he hoped she would have time to turn her bow to his defense as an Uyumak rushed him. Unexpectedly, one of his enemies threw its club. Jen went to block it with his sword, but the blade cut through it without throwing it off course, and the club head hammered him square in the chest, knocking the wind from him. In his effort to stay standing, he wrenched his ankle, recovering in time to impale the first Uyumak as it attacked him. The others weren't far behind, but quick, painful cuts that severed away pieces of club and flesh demoralized them, and they backed away. Then all 5 bull-rushed him at once. An arrow took one down, and as the wall was about to crash into him, Jen dove at them, body low, slashing at their legs. Writhing Uyumak fell atop him, and he tried to roll away. Sticky Uyumak blood poured over him as he struggled like a fish caught in a scaly net. With a yell, he pulled himself free, wiping his eyes clear and trying to get his sword up. But there were no more attackers. Feathered arrows protruded from the pile before him.
"Jen!" Maywan said, running forward. "You live.
Are you hurt? I've sprained my ankle and I'm having a hard time breathing.
Maywin ripped open his shirt with her knife, revealing a dark bruise. She frowned.
Can you move?
I think so, he said, just slowly.
Then let's go.
I doubt they would have the bashers pursue us, but they could catch us if we are forced to walk.
Jen nodded and limped westward as Maywin collected the Uyumark leader's head and stuffed it in a leather sack from her backpack.
If we are not evidence enough, she said, explaining herself.
Next time, Jen suggested, perhaps we shouldn't throw rocks at the hornet's nest.
My father used to say that, she replied with a weak smile. I suspect, Jen, that there will not be a next time for you. We will both be in plenty of trouble when we return, though for me it matters little. For your sake, I could change the story to where they ambushed us. It's mostly true.
With the Pontiff and Ethris in camp, I think our best defense lies in the truth. Let's just stick to looking as pathetic as possible and hope that sympathy carries the day.
Maywin grinned and drank deeply from a waterskin before handing it to Jen.
I'm sorry to have gotten you into this mess.
My hatred for you, Mark, sometimes gets the better of me. One thing we can be sure of, though, no one will call us unskilled or cowardly. Killing one Chukka and 23 Uyumark.
22.
I think the shaman survived.
A pity, but 22 between the two of us is nothing to scoff at, even with Aldradan McMeer's sword.
Jen's eyes widened in surprise. She furrowed her brow.
Didn't you know? They never told you?
No.
Jen was shocked. Aldradan's sword was legendary, having many magical properties in the tales. Uyumark had come to fear Aldradan and his sword in the days when he aided those fleeing Lalmanar. Jen wondered how many of the fantastic tales of the blade were true.
Ethris told me many would object to me carrying it, and wouldn't tell me more of it.
Indeed they would, said Maywin. It is not to be touched by any, until Aldradan comes again, though I assure you he is quite dead, as I helped bury him. This is the second time that sword has come to my aid. There will be time for the story later, if we hurry. The secret of your blade is safe with me, but I think it will not be a secret for long.
They arrived in camp well after dark. His ability to ignore pain didn't make his ankle or his lungs work any better, and even with Maywin shouldering the pack and letting him lean on her as needed, they made slow progress. By the time they passed the first outlying patrols, Jen's entire body ached. His ankle was uncomfortably tight against his boot, and he felt sick. Maywin was pale and exhausted, and they both stank of Uyumark blood and their own sweat. Jen could hear Jeff's clear voice a mile away, and as they finally strode into the circle of clapping, festive nobles and soldiers, the celebration came to an abrupt halt. With what Jen thought was excellent dramatic timing, Maywin let the bloody, scowling Uyumark head roll out of her bag and into the middle of the crowd, just as they all went silent. Firelight glinted off its row of tiny eyes, the sharp teeth of the round mouth open wide in its rictus. Jeff's eyes shot open and he covered his mouth. Merel and Fenner came running forward from the direction of the Shalane's wagon, and Jen watched as their faces went from horror to anger, and then back to sympathy and concern when they noticed his injuries. Regent Ogbeth stood.
Boil some water to clean and heal them. Then the fire goes out. There will be no more fires on this trip. I want Jen and Maywin and all leaders in my tent immediately. Fetch the Shalane as well. I suppose the bard will want to write all this down too.
Jen's wounds need attention, Maywin objected.
He's made it this far, he'll last another hour,
Regent Ogbeth grunted before stalking off. Merel followed him, but Fenner ran to Jen's side, face full of concern.
Are you all right? She asked, staring uncomfortably at the bruise on his chest.
I'll live, Fenner. Don't worry.
All I've done all day is worry. When nightfall came and you hadn't returned, just like those other scouts, well,
I am here.
We survived.
Fenner humphed, hands on her hips.
Well, I'll have more words for you later. I think the First Mother will too.
Jen stumbled a bit on his bad ankle, and Maywin was there putting his arm around her shoulder and helping him along.
This is poor reward, she said in Elvish. They should see to our wounds before making us talk.
I'll help him, Fenner offered.
Let her do it, Fenner,
Jen replied. We are both a bloody foul mess. Fenner frowned darkly at Maywin and walked off in the direction of the Shillane's wagon. She's too soft for someone like you, Jen, Maywin commented. Jen grunted as his foot hit uneven ground. He said, It's nice to have something soft around when everything else is so hard. They reached the tent after a painful walk, exciting all kinds of comments from the people they passed. Regent Ogbeth and Mirel were there, along with Captain Tolbrook and Warlord Maelsworth from Ogmere. Mirel stood by Regent Ogbeth, arms crossed, and Jen felt her stern gaze upon him. Jeff, face a bit peaked, was fumbling with parchment and ink. The Pontiff and Ethris arrived, talking rapidly to each other. The Pontiff examined them, face showing alarm.
Why was the cleaning and healing of these people not seen to? He asked pointedly.
Regent Ogbeth answered,
We need to know what they found as soon as possible to assess the threat. Neither is mortally wounded.
The Pontiff frowned, displeased.
I shall fetch the pure men. They can at least start the work of cleaning them up.
He stepped outside briefly and then returned. Two camp chairs were forthcoming and Jen sat down heavily. The Shillane and the Ha'ulric entered last, the dark guard surrounding the tent. She immediately came to examine their wounds.
Don't touch them, Shillane, the Pontiff warned. Remember last time.
These wounds are from Uyumak, not demons, Your Grace, she replied.
Even so, you should save your strength. My pure men will care for them.
Save my strength for what? She complained. To lie in a rolling fort for days on end? Let me help them.
Shillane, Mirel interjected sharply, you should not talk to the Pontiff in that manner. Obey the Pontiff.
The Shillane acquiesced, moving to stand behind Jen.
Where is Shadan Cairn?
Regent Ogbeth asked, voice impatient.
Here, my good regent,
Torbrand entered, face amused.
Well, Jen, he said, inspecting his former student, didn't I teach you any better than that? I hope there were at least 100 of them, or I will be very disappointed. You could have at least invited me along.
The Shadan looked around, and upon finding a room full of frowns, feigned innocence.
Merely a jest between warriors, my good people.
Let's get this going, Regent Ogbeth, Mirel prompted coldly.
Very well. Jen, Maywin, which of you would like to tell us what happened?
I will, Maywin volunteered. It was my expedition. Jen tried to relax as Maywin unfolded the tale. During her explanation, a pure man with a bucket of water entered and knelt beside him. After removing Jen's shirt, the bruise on his chest eliciting a wince from even the angry First Mother, he inspected his wounds. Jen heard the Shillane gasp at seeing the cuts on his hand and shoulder, both caked with blood. The entire proceeding came to a halt when the pure man cut Jen's boot and sock off to reveal an ankle swollen purple and black. Another pure man cleaned the Uyumak scratches on Maywin, the only wounds she'd received. Maywin was honest and forthcoming, though she gave little detail on their battles to hide the secret of Jen's sword. As the tale went on, Mirel became even more livid than before. Her blonde hair was pulled away from a face as severe as a pretty face can be, and her eyes bored into him. Jeff wrote furiously, and at the tense spots, the pure men stopped cleaning their charges to listen intently.
Let me get this straight, Maywin, Regent Ogbeth said when the half-elf finished. You'll find a group of Uyumak, and instead of running back to warn us and get help, you decide to assassinate their shaman and fight off the hunters? What, just needed a little fun? The caravan a little too boring for you?
The two of us killed 22 Uyumak and lived. For me that is a good day, Maywin countered with such stern defiance to silence everyone. This caravan has been careless for too long, and my warnings have been ignored. The issue is what you're going to do now that you start to feel your peril. What Jen and I did, we did and are done. What you do now will determine if this little parade manages to roll the rest of the way to Eldaluri Mora or not. Maywin's fire was enough to turn the conversation away from a critique of their decisions and onto what was to be done to protect the caravan. From Mirel's stare, Jen knew she wouldn't forget their folly so soon. While the assembled nobles argued the finer points of getting a large procession of people and supplies through hostile territory, the pure man finished his cleaning,
wrapping Jen's ankle in a towel and instructing him to see him afterward. Another towel was given to him and Maywen to dry themselves with. The Shalane touched Jen's shoulder and bent down to whisper in his ear.
I think healing you will be in vain. My mother is going to kill you.
Jen agreed. He closed his eyes to calm his mind and let the tension of the day seep out of him. After a moment, he could feel the pressure in his chest lessening, and he could move the fingers of his right hand again. He realized the Shalane still had her fingers on his shoulders. He considered forcing her to stop, but decided against it since it would likely create a scene. He quickly used the towel to cover his chest and arm, keeping his right hand closed. Before long, the pain and exhaustion had fled, and the Shalane backed slowly away.
Shalane, Regent Ogbith said as the meeting came to a close, this will be the last time we can rescue you out of your carriage. I am sorry.
I shall bear up well, she said, since it was also the only time.
Very good. Captain Tolbrook will take Jen's place tonight while he is healed.
Morel fixed her eyes on Maywen and Regent Ogbith and pointed at Jen.
This one goes on no more little jaunts into the wild, understand?
Both nodded their assents and people filed out of the tent.
Well, Shalane,
Shatan said as she came close to him,
not much of a protector, is he? Nearly got killed by a few dirty Uyumark.
Shadan Cairn smacked his son in the face and all chatter died.
You show respect,
the Shadan said vehemently.
A hardy group of squirrels could see you dead for all you know of the blade.
Shatan did not back down from his father's fiery stare.
When I come into my power, we'll see who's alive and who's dead.
He left quickly as Torbrand seethed. Jaren rushed the Shalane from the tent during the confrontation. Maywen helped Jen up, though he didn't need it, and he faked a limp as they left the tent and headed toward the Pure Men's camp. A sudden shove from behind nearly sent him to the ground.
She healed you, didn't she?
It was Mirel, face angry in the light of the moons.
Yes,
Jen confessed sheepishly. Maywen laughed and continued walking.
I'll make sure they give you a good burial, she teased in Elvish.
Thank you,
Jen answered back in kind.
Follow me, Jen, Mirel commanded. May I get a change of clothes first? Please do. Meet me at my tent when you're a little more presentable.
Jen arrived at his wagon to find Jaren just settling in.
Jen, you had us worried. How are you?
I am well, though I was worried there for a while too.
Jen opened the box that held his clothes.
It was my first time to face down a hunter charge. Stories don't do it justice. I faced one of the Dervin's wild shard in my younger days. I had 15 soldiers with me and it was a close thing. Facing it with but two, and one a woman, would be several times worse.
Jen removed the pins from his old shirt and affixed them to the new.
Luckily, Maywen is as good as several men when it comes to the bow. Good night, Jaren.
Jen grabbed his last shirt, pair of pants and boots, and left.
Good night, lad.
Jen bathed quickly in the chilly river and half considered finding something else to do besides attend his interview with Mirel. He had received permission to go on the expedition from his commanding officer, so technically she should yell at Regent Ogbith. In the end, Jen couldn't bring himself to disobey her. Mirel had always supported and cared for him, so he steeled himself and walked the short distance to her tent. Cadean stood guard at the entrance, and Jen thought he could detect a hint of a smile on the corners of the protector's mouth as he pushed the tent flap aside for Jen. Mirel's tent had only a chest and her bedding, and she invited him to sit near the door as she sat opposite him. It was hard for Jen to know how he should think of her. On the one hand, she was old enough to be his mother. On the other, she was young enough and pretty enough not to be. She usually treated him as a friend, but she could switch from friend to first mother in an instant. Tonight they had clearly moved beyond the first mother and liege relationship and stepped into foot and bug territory. She stared at him for a long time before speaking, eyes glinting with boiling anger.
Before I get to my several points, Jen, there's really only one thing you need understand and remember, if you forget everything else I may say to you tonight. The thing is this. Regent Ogbith may be your commander, But when it comes to where Jen goes and where Jen doesn't go on this trip, there are only two people, me and me. The next time you kill an Uyumark, my daughter better be close enough to watch. How dare you go running off without my knowing? Don't give me that stone-faced look of yours. I want to see you're sorry, and in case you're all smug about killing half a company of Uyumark, let's just review all of your stupid decisions today, shall we? For what seemed like half the night, Mirel laid waste to anything Jen might be thinking good about himself, and pointed out repeatedly that she was before Eldaloth himself when it came to Jen getting permission to do anything besides stay within earshot of the Shalane. He was fairly sure she would have impugned his parentage for all of his faults if he had any parentage to speak of. At one point he thought she might actually make up some parents for him, just for that purpose, but mercifully she did eventually tire and tell him to get out of her sight. Jen felt more exhausted than ever as he left the tent, but still far from sleep. Cadean clapped him on the back in an understanding gesture, and Jen glanced back to see a wide grin splitting his face. For a moment he stood and wondered what to do. He couldn't go back to his own wagon since Jaren would be sleeping there. The moon's positions in the sky told him that Mirel had only berated him for a little over an hour. His stomach rumbled, and he raided the supply wagon for something to eat, before returning to the Shalane's carriage to attempt to relieve Captain Tolbrook.
"You are to rest tonight, sir," Tolbrook objected. "You've had a long day and probably have a good bit of healing to do yet."
"I'm fit, Captain. The First Mother herself just told me to not leave the Shalane's side without her permission, so I'm trying to obey her orders. Trust me, Captain, I'm ready for duty. If you think otherwise, come check on me in a couple of hours to be sure." Tolbrook thought for a moment.
"Well, I wouldn't want to cross the First Mother if she's told you to watch her."
"Indeed you wouldn't."
"Very well, then. I will check in on you. I need to run Kimdan through a few more drills before I let him sleep. I don't see how you could be ready to watch through the night after what you've been through. But you're an extraordinary one, so I'll give you a chance."
"Thank you, Captain," Jen replied, as Tolbrook walked off into the dark. The camp was quieting down, though the soldiers had started riding patrols around the edge of the circle of wagons. The night was again clear, the stars and moons brilliant in the sky, the shards drifting silently by. After Mirel's scathing, he supposed he should feel guilty for what he'd done, but he couldn't dredge up the feeling. Now that he wasn't dripping blood, running from Uyumark, or hobbling on a bad ankle, the memory of the experience invigorated him. Jen thought of how, when he was a child, he couldn't stop playing with Raphael's small statuette of an Uyumark, even though it gave him bad dreams. If he'd had any idea as a child of what Uyumark were really like, he would have buried the thing.
"I see you survived my mother's wrath. I could hear some of it," the Shalane said from behind the small opening in the bars.
"She knows you healed me, so you're likely next in line. If she tells the Pontiff, you might want to consider feigning deafness. I hope your mother can see fit to forgive me."
"Don't worry, Jen. She only does that to people she really likes."
"That's comforting. I never thought I would hear that kind of language coming out of a woman's mouth. She could outdo any woodsman I ever knew."
The Shalane laughed.
"My mother does know some choice words, doesn't she? I think the way she found out about your absence accounts for a lot of her vitriol. The missing scouts worry her greatly. She had no idea you and Maywin had embarked on a scouting mission and were late in returning until she came at sundown to talk with me and found Jaren still on duty. I told her where you had gone. Fenner told me earlier about you running off with Maywin."
"An interesting choice of words."
"Yes. You may find that your little getaway with a pretty half-elven woman may have helped in other matters. Fenner was out here pacing around the carriage nearly all day. She actually told Jeff to run off and sing a song or something at one point."
"He must have been crushed."
"Probably. But you know Jeff, always hunting for sunshine in the storm. I'm sure he will be after her all the more tomorrow."
"You were kidding about Kimdan last night, right?"
"No. But unfortunately for him, he's on duty all day and off, training with the Dark Guard half the night, so unless he gets a little more time, I think you won't have to worry about him for a while."
Jen shook his head. This trip had proved more complicated than he could have imagined.
"Thank you for healing me, though I must note my objection for any record that Jeff may write up about the incident."
"You're welcome. It makes me furious when they tell me I can't heal someone, especially you. Healing is one thing I can do during this lousy trip. If I can't even heal my own protectors, then what good is my talent?
You just need to learn to be more like Shatan, Jen suggested. He's perfectly comfortable contributing nothing whatsoever. He didn't say one word while they decided the strategy of the caravan. The only thing he ever puts any effort into is trying to disgrace me.
The Shalane's voice dropped to a whisper. He's not doing very well on that front. Watching his father slap him has replaced you telling me to shut up as the high point of the trip thus far.
They shared a laugh at the memory of Shatan's bewildered look upon being hit, probably for the first time in his life. The sight of Fenner striding briskly forward brought an abrupt end to their mirth. She stopped in front of Jen, and for several moments Jen couldn't tell if she would hug him or slap him. Thankfully, she settled on the former before stepping back and putting her hands on her hips and scorching him with the same kind of look Mirel had tortured him with for the last hour.
"Well, I certainly hope Mirel put you straight, Lord Jen. I bet you thought it was really funny smiling a little smile and waving a little wave to poor little Fenner as you go running out of the camp with that pretty little half-elven hussy."
"That's not fair, Fenner. She is not a—"
"It's not your turn to talk, Jen. Don't you think that just because we haven't had much time together lately that you can just start fraternizing with whomever you please and that there won't be any consequences? I am not to be trifled with. I have feelings too. Do you have any idea how we all felt when you didn't return? Sick, that's how. You only bother to tell Regent Ogbith where you're going, like the rest of us don't care that you're off on some dangerous mission where you almost get killed. I obviously don't mean enough to you for you to even tell me. I just get a quaint see-you-later Fenner smile as you run by."
"We didn't know it would be a dangerous mission, and you're the one that's been preoccupied with Jeff every second of the—" A stinging slap brought his argument up short.
"Don't you dare think that this is my fault. I wouldn't run off with some gorgeous ranger without telling you what I was up to. I've noticed you and Maywan talking lately, always in Elvish, as if you have your own little secrets to keep from the rest of us. I'll tell you this, Jen, my heart belongs to you. One day, I hope yours will belong to me."
She marched off without looking back. If he weren't on duty, Jen knew the right thing to do would be to follow her, pretend he was wrong, and apologize.
"Don't worry," the Shalane said. "She only does that to people she likes."
"Very funny, Shalane. Do you show this wicked edge of yours to everyone or just me?"
"Just you, I'm afraid."
Jen put his arms behind his back and clasped his hands.
"Well, if you have anything nasty to say to me, go ahead and get it over with. It would be most efficient to get all the abuse taken care of in one day." "What should I say?"
the Shalane whispered teasingly, coming close to the bars. "Your reckless self-endangerment has saved both my dignity and my life. I could hardly tell you to stop now out of respect for the good incurred by your past insanity, but—" and her voice grew soft and serious.
"Please don't do anything like that again."
That was the last remark Jen heard directed at him that evening, and he was grateful. He figured he would be the laughing stock of the camp tomorrow, since the Dark Guard and half the camp had heard both of his thrashings. But the night was quiet and starry, the wind soft, and he enjoyed the silence until the sun bathed his face in light.